Morning, I'd like to address a subject that, I've just called the 20 years test. That may seem like a strange title. I guess it is a strange title, but let me explain what I mean by that. 20 years in this title is not necessarily a literal 20 years, but rather represents an indefinite period of time. It could be short, it could be long. It extends sometime to the future, but it might not extend beyond tomorrow. But then again, it could extend, 1 year, 5 years, 20 years, 50 years. So really, you can plug in just about any period of time that you would desire there, and it would fit the point that I want to make today. The point is this. The validity or the quality of our decisions in life might be tested by anticipating the impact that they might have on our lives in the future. Now, that seems like something rather simple, but as we'll see, it's not such a simple test to apply to people. So the test is really a question. We need to ask ourselves, what would the ramifications or implications of this decision be for my life 1 year from now, 5 years from now, 20, or even 50 years from now? So the question that we need to ask is not, what will this do for me right now, right at this moment? Rather, the question we need to ask ourselves is, what will this do for me, or where will this decision put me 1, 5, 10, or 20 years or more from now? That's the 20 years test. This is all because, I'm sorry, I should have advanced beyond that, but this is because decisions and deeds have what we might call ripple effects. You take a pebble, a little stone or whatever, you throw it into a pond or a pool of water, and it creates a splash at the point of impact with the surface of the water. But is that all it does? No, it doesn't just stop with that initial splash, does it? You can see these concentric circles, which we call ripples, spreading out from the point of impact. And where do they go? They go way beyond the point of impact. They might go all the way to the very edges of the pool. And in cases of large impacts, you can imagine maybe a meteor strike in the ocean or water, you might have ripple effects as big as tsunamis that, throw big waves up on the shores of faraway lands. Our decisions ought to be seen like that. They can have ripple effects. Now, people are deceived into thinking that their decisions or what they do today have no repercussion, have no consequences beyond the point of their nose or beyond the day that those decisions are made. And that once the deed is done, it's done, it's over with, you've seen the end of it, that's it. That's not true. That's not true. Our decisions and deeds have ripple effects. Some decisions are made long before they're made. By that I mean, we think that, we're going to have all these decisions to make out here in our future. You know what? We don't have those decisions to make anymore. Why? Because we made certain decisions way back here that really make those decisions up here. And I'll be explaining what I mean as we proceed through this lesson. But people funnel themselves sometimes into a certain way of life by the decisions that they make. We can all see this. We can all see this. People, what I mean is that people close off some of their choices they have made, or they could have made, they might have made in the future, by the choices they have made in their past. In my own case, for instance, I remember when I was in high school and my dad was asking me, what I might want to do with my future, where I might want to go to college. And I said, I'm going to go to Florida College. I want to preach the gospel. And all he said to me was, that I can remember anyway, well, you know, preachers used to have to eat beans in order to preach the gospel. What he meant by that was, you know, in the past, you know, preachers weren't paid very much, but now brethren are doing better, financially speaking, by preachers. And so he encouraged me, and, you know, I could have wished for more advice at that point, but I'm not blaming my father because he has never been a preacher. So I'm sure he didn't have experience to tell me that. But of course, I didn't get any real much advice from other preachers. Not that I would have listened to it anyway, being young and therefore disinclined to listen to advice. But because I made that state, basically because I made that decision controlled the rest of my life. Because as a result of that decision, I did not prepare myself to do anything else with my life. So by that decision that I made back there, I kind of funneled my life in a certain direction. I'm not saying that that's bad. I know some brethren that would say that was bad, perhaps, but that's just the way it is. I'm trying to use a personal illustration to point out that we make decisions back here. They have implications for our lives up here, sometimes such severe implications that by the time we get up here, we found that we have shut off those decisions, those choices, by the decisions we made back here. We don't see that way back here. That's really the point of my lesson this morning. Decisions can be very easily and quickly made, but their consequences can sometimes be irreversible. Let me give you some illustrations here from physical life. Take a tsunami, what tidal wave it used to be called. But, you know, I'm told that a tsunami at sea, if you're on a ship at sea and a tsunami rolls under your big ship or whatever, then it's imperceptible. The tsunami out at sea is imperceptible. But then when it moves into shore, it rises up into an immense wall of water that can be very violent and destructive. Another example would be an air mattress. You ever try to get air, squeeze air out of an air mattress? I have. Now, I think today they have better devices that will maybe suck the air out of the air mattress. And that's nice. But in the old days, you know, if you wanted to get air out of an air mattress, you had to lie down on it and roll around on it and try to press it down and get that air out. Well, what happens? You press it down, press down that bulge on one corner, and oh, you get a bulge over there. You go over here, press it down here, oh, you get a bulge over there. That's the way life works sometimes. What we do in one area of our lives sometimes bulges up and has consequences in another area. One last example, and that is the so-called slippery slope. Sometimes we put ourselves on a slippery slope. You ever had to try to climb up a slippery slope? Maybe when I was a child and actually lived on a dirt road in Mississippi, we sometimes got rains and we lived on a slope, or there was a bank leading down to the road anyway. You try to climb that slippery slope after rain, and you know, you start sliding back. It's kind of hard to get up that slope, and you take a step and you slide back two steps. And that's the way our decisions can be sometimes. We make a decision, and actually that decision causes us to slide back, perhaps to where we don't want to go. And the Bible is supportive of this principle. In Genesis 44, verse 16, Joseph's brothers thought of what happened to them as God's way of exposing what they had done to their brother. It says in Genesis 44, verse 16, "So Judah said, 'What can we say to my Lord? What can we speak? And how can we justify ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants.'" Here was something that they thought one of them at least had done wrong, and they saw it as, well, they were caught, supposedly. And Judah says, "Well, okay, you caught us. We've been exposed here." Yeah. But who's done it? God has. That was the way they looked at it. The consequences of sin, according to Numbers 32, verse 23, seems to seek us out. The statement is there made, your sin will find you out. It eventually catches up with you. In Hosea 8, verse 7, we have a statement there that ought to be memorable to us. Hosea 8, verse 7. And there we see that it says, for they sow the wind and they reap the whirlwind. And of course that goes along with what is stated in Galatians 6, verse 7. We reap according to what we sow. So, the painful consequences of sin are greater, according to the Scriptures, ultimately, than the pleasure the sinner initially derived from those sins. So, little decisions can accumulate into big decisions that sometimes set us on a certain path that may be hard to get off of. You know, it's been said, and this has been attributed to various people, be careful what you think, because thoughts become words. Be careful what you say, because words become deeds. Be careful what you do, because deeds become habits. Be careful of your habits, because habits become character. And I added this one on, although I think others have added it on before me. Character becomes destiny. Be careful of your character, because character becomes destiny. But where does all that go back to? It goes back to maybe just the things we decide to think about. Let me look at some biblical examples of this principle with you. Jacob's favoritism toward Joseph. Jacob made a decision to show favoritism to Joseph. Okay? Now, initially, he might have not thought that that was any big deal. Actually, we can go back farther than that, because probably one of the reasons that Jacob decided to show favoritism to Joseph, his youngest son, was not only because it was his youngest son. I guess maybe older children tend to think that the babies in the family get, well, babied, right? The favoritism is shown to them. But also, Joseph was the son, the only child of his beloved wife Rachel. He loved Rachel more than Leah. Okay. He probably showed that. So actually, a decision he made all the way back here to love Rachel more and to show that he loved her more, and then transferred that favoritism to her son Joseph, that had repercussions, well, years, decades later, because what happened, well, I should have this up here, the scriptures up here. The other brothers, they got very angry at Joseph, and you know the story. They sold him into slavery and then left their father with the impression that Joseph had been killed by a wild beast. Now, here's some decisions that Jacob is making that have long-term consequences here. In Genesis, the 37th chapter, you can see the mistakes he's making. He doesn't even think to hide his favoritism. It's not just that he favors Joseph, but he doesn't even try to hide that. What does he do? He makes him a coat of many colors. At least according to the King James Version, some say it was a long sleeved garment. But anyway, but it really doesn't even stop there. His brothers were getting jealous over this obvious favoritism, but when you look farther into Genesis 37, it says in verse 12, then his brothers went to pasture their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers pasturing the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send you to them. And he said to him, I will go. Was that a good decision? Should he be sending his favored son, who is hated by his brothers, to go and check on them and report back to his father about them? Maybe not a good decision at that point. Not a good, as a matter of fact, as it turned out, it was not a good decision. But the point I'm trying to make is that here, Jacob is making decisions that in and of themselves might seem like they're rather small, but cumulatively, they're mounting up to something that is going to create problems for him way down the line. And ultimately, the brothers make a decision to sell Joseph, their brother, off into Egyptian slavery. They make a decision that is going to hurt them for a long time. As a matter of fact, it hurt the whole family, because Jacob eventually says, when he stands, I guess about 22 years later, before Pharaoh, this is the way he puts it in Genesis 47 verse 9, "The years of my sojourning are 130. Few and unpleasant have been the years of my life, nor have they attained to the years that my fathers lived during the days of their sojourning. Few and unpleasant have been the days of my life." That's how he saw his life. Well, he set himself up for that. I don't mean to sound callous. I'm sorry that he had the terrible experiences he did. But the point I'm trying to make is, decisions he made back here had repercussions up here. Okay? Joseph's brothers themselves, okay, they tended to their anger. They did what their anger, their hatred suggested they should do at the moment, according to Genesis 37. Well, was that the end of it? Once they had gotten their father deceived, once they had sold Joseph off into slavery, was that the end of the matter? No, apparently this was a burden of guilt that plagued them for the next two decades or more. Because when they're confronted about this, and they start having problems, when they go down to Egypt, and unbeknownst to them, their brother Joseph, now grown up, confronts them, what are they thinking about when they start having problems? Their minds go back to what they did to Joseph. You know what that suggests to me? That suggests to me that they've been dealing with some guilt for a long, long time. In Genesis 42, verses 21 and 22, it says, "Then they said to one another, 'Truly we are guilty concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore this distress has come upon us.'" You know, how many times do you think about when you have severe problems in your life, "Oh, you know what, this is happening because of what I did 22 years ago." But that's what they were saying. That's what they were saying. Finally, let me mention the prodigal son. Okay, the prodigal son, he asks, apparently prematurely, for his share of the inheritance. He goes out and squanders it in, well, the King James Version says, riotous living. And, oh, everything for a while there, he makes that decision. He's going to get his hands on that money. He's going to take it. He's going to leave home. He's going to go out and have a good old time. No repercussions to those decisions, right? Wrong. He has repercussions. Because he runs out of money, and worse than that, a famine hits where he is. And he's out there feeding the pigs. And he gets so hungry that, you know, nobody's giving him anything. He feels like eating what he's feeding to the pigs. And finally comes to his senses and said, "I'm going to get up and I'm going to go home." But his decision back here, his decisions, I should say, back here, had repercussions later on. Now, why don't people apply this test? Why don't people just soberly think, okay, this is what I want to do? What will this do for me 1 year from now? Okay. If I make this decision, are there going to be any implications of this decision for me 1 year from now? Let's move out 5 years. What will my situation be then if I make this decision now? 10 years, 20 years, 50 years even. I call this the 20 years test, but again, you can plug any amount of time you want to. What I'm basically trying to say is, don't think about just today. "Oh, I'm going to feel good today if I do this." No, think, What am I going to feel like tomorrow if I do this? What am I going to feel like 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years from now if I do this now? We need to think about that. Well, why don't people do that? Let me just quickly mention a few reasons. First of all, because of an uncertain impact. You tell yourself, I don't know what's... I can't tell that anything negative is going to happen to me 20 years from now. If I make this decision now, as far as I know, there won't be any implications. So it's not certain that there, at least in our thinking, that there is going to be any impact, any negative repercussions to this decision. Sir, at least none that we can foresee or know about. Especially if we don't want to think too deeply about it. Secondly, there is a lack of immediate negative feedback. You know, it's interesting to me because I've never tried to restrain a dog. Leslie and I have had one dog since we've been married. We didn't try to restrain it with some sort of electrified fence. Some people put up electrified fences around their backyards or whatever in order to keep their animals inside the fence. And I've talked to people who do this. It's just a very small, almost imperceptible strand of wire that they encircle around. They encircle their yard with, and it's electrified. In other words, you touch it and you get shocked. Unpleasant experience. And what I'm told is that, you know, these owners, they will turn that electricity on for a while. The dog comes like he wants to do. He sees somebody out there or some interesting thing outside beyond the wire. Dog comes up, touches that wire. Oh, gets shocked. Oh, that is a shocking experience. The animal doesn't like that. Maybe that happens two or three times. And then the animal begins to learn, oh, if I step beyond this point, I'm going to have a very unpleasant experience. That's a very effective means of keeping that animal inside. So effective that I'm told after a while, the owners can turn off the electricity flowing through that wire. Does the animal know that? No. But see, the animal has gotten that immediate negative feedback by approaching that wire and therefore, it doesn't do it again. But you got to have that initial, very negative the shock, to keep that animal inside that electrical fence. But what would happen if that animal never got the shock? If you just put up one little strand of wire, you think that would keep the animal in, unelectrified? No. No. You got to have that immediate negative feedback. Well, Satan knows that, you know, if he gives us a good punch in the stomach every time we sin, how many of us would sin then? So he knows, you know, you got to hold back that immediate negative feedback. You got to make sin seem pleasurable to get people into it. Then the negative things come on when it's too late for them to do anything about it. Isn't Satan sneaky? Oh, he's bad. So sometimes there's just not an immediate negative feedback when it comes to sin. Thirdly, some people do not apply this test because even though they may have negative repercussions from their sins, they don't observe any cause-effect relationship there. Okay? In other words, they don't think, this is happening to me now because something I did way back there, I don't see any connection. And they may not want to make that connection. We may not want to make that connection. We don't like to believe that, you know, because we made a bad decision back here, you know, we did something dumb back here, this is what is happening. This is why this is happening now. We just don't want to think that we were that dumb, do we? So, people don't apply the test then. Now, some of the things that I'm about to mention, and I will mention them quickly, but you think, oh, this is about physical life. And the things I'm going to mention may not involve sin per se, but they still may have physical implications or spiritual implications, I should say, for our lives. Proverbs 30, verses 8 and 9 is the scripture I want to go to at this point. Proverbs 30, verses 8 and 9. It says there, keep deception and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is my portion. Okay, so let me stop there and interject this. He's talking about physical things. Can physical things in our lives have spiritual implications for us? Yes, that's what he's going to point out in verse 9. Lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or, lest I be in want and steal and profane the name of my God. So, you know, there can be problems with being too satiated and being, you know, hungry. So, physical things can have implications for our lives. So, let me start off here by looking at something that a decision that may have implications for our spiritual future. And of course, finances certainly will. Finances definitely have spiritual implications. 1 Timothy 6, verse 10. Love of money is the root of all sorts of evil. And sometimes this is because people do not realize the importance of the principle of delayed gratification. You know, delay having a little pleasure now in order that you may have greater and more important pleasure later on. Okay? And that's really what Jesus was talking about. This is the ultimate delayed gratification that he's talking about in Matthew 6, verses 19 through 21. Lay up your treasures in heaven, not upon the earth. Okay, you could enjoy your physical pleasures now, but if you forego them now, oh, you will get something incomprehensibly better in heaven. The ultimate delayed gratification. Well, in Proverbs 6, verses 6 through 8, we have a brief statement about the little ant. I like the ant. They're busy little creatures. I like the ant as an example of this very principle. It says in Proverbs 6, beginning with verse 6, go to the ant, O sluggard, observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief officer or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. In other words, that little ant is anticipating the time when, oh, I won't be able to go out and there won't be food readily available in the wintertime for me. I'm going to have to store up some food while it's plentiful in the summertime or in the period of the harvest. Do we think that way? Sometimes I'm amazed when I hear reports about, for instance, about how little Americans have in savings. You know, we used to talk about saving for a rainy day. Can we recognize the importance of this principle? Okay, let's set aside some now for a rainy day or for when we will need it later on. Let's think about that. Now, does that have implications for our spiritual lives? Sure it does. A lot of people want to spend their money now on physical things and then starve their spiritual lives later on. People prefer to spend their material bounty on their pleasures and then give the leftovers to God when it should be the other way around. I'm not saying we can buy our way into heaven, but you know, we need to think about, listen, if I'm handling my finances correctly, I should have in my budget a substantial amount of money. We live in an affluent country, folks. We live in an affluent country. And we should have a substantial part of our budget set aside to serve God with in some way. Make that a part of the budget, so that other things have to be built around that. Otherwise, it's going to be easy to say, well, I spend on this and this and this. I have money for this and this and this. Oh, what about a contribution? Well, I really didn't think about that, but here's a little bit of money left over. I'll just put that in, and that's fine. No. Our finances have spiritual implications. The decisions that we make about them can have far-reaching spiritual effects. What about our preparation for the future? You know, dreams and expectations are not just automatically fulfilled. Some people seem to think that they can have something just by wanting it. I want it, therefore I ought to have it. I expect it, therefore I am entitled to it. Well, you know, life does not usually work that way for the average person. I don't know that I've ever known a time in my life when I could just, want something to be and therefore it would be. You know, that's something that belongs to fairy tales. If you want to live in a certain way, you're going to have to prepare yourself to live in that way. It's going to have to start back here. You can't wait till you get up here and decide, I want to live this way. Well, no, in order to live this way, decisions had to be made back there. So a person must anticipate what is required to prepare himself to live the kind of life he wants to live. That's true not only financially, materially, physically, but even spiritually, of course. That's the main point. Otherwise, we're going to have to settle for what life gives to us. So there's got to be planning, there's got to be preparation, there's got to be goal setting, and there's got to be progress checking toward that goal periodically. Education, particularly, can strongly affect a person spiritually. The kind of education one pursues, the schools he attends, can have a large impact on his faith. We need to be careful when we're thinking about what we're going to prepare ourselves educationally to do, or whatever kind of preparation that may be. We need to realize now that this decision that we make may lock us into a certain lifestyle. So take that into account when we decide. When you decide, you know, what you're going to do early on. I realize that this lesson, to a large extent, may be geared especially toward the young, but you know, even older people can recognize that, you know, 40, 50, 60 years old, the decisions I'm making now are going to have repercussions later on. Jobs and careers. Careers and jobs can have a massive impact on one's spirituality. A Christian needs to select a job and a career which will enhance rather than detract from his spirituality. I can remember, you know, when I was a young preacher, hearing another preacher, you know, this was in a fairly casual setting, maybe the setting of a small Bible study or whatever. He wasn't opposed to, you know, a Christian becoming involved in the military per se. Some brethren are. But at the same time, even though he wasn't opposed to it, you know, he was acknowledging that the military life can be hard on the spirituality of a person. It can take you away from your family, can take you away from the church, limit your choices and so forth, put you in the company of people who may not be very respectful of God. Don't mean to put down the military, but yeah, I could say the same thing about other types of jobs too. So we need to think about that. Some jobs might not provide the income needed, might present work schedules which conflict with church attendance, or might remove a person from good spiritual influences and place him among bad influences. We need to think about those things ahead of time because, you know, once you have been educated for a certain type of life or job or career, and then you get into that career, then, mid-course, it can be hard to decide to do something else. And there may be problems. Marriages, of course. It is hard to conceive of the choice which is more critical to one's spiritual future than one's marital mate. There's probably no other factor, as a matter of fact, which more effectively determines how well or how poorly one serves the Lord. The impact of marriage, for instance, on our spirituality is really brought out by Paul, I think, pretty well in when I say pretty well, of course he was inspired. Of course it's pretty well in the general sense, but I mean, its focus is particularly on that. And what he says in chapter 7 of 1 Corinthians verses 32 through 35, he says, "But I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife, and his interests are divided. And the woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband." Now notice what he says in verse 35 particularly. "And this I say for your own benefit, not to put a restraint upon you, but to promote what is seemly and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord." In other words, he's saying, I'm not saying these things to tell you that you should not get married. But this is my way of saying, you know, whether you're married or you're unmarried, be devoted to the Lord. Because I do might effectively mean, just to be very blunt about this now, may mean I do go to heaven or I do go to hell. And that's my way of saying, listen, folks, our choices in marital mates can make that much difference. Then, okay, I want to be an elder. I want to be a deacon. I want to be a Bible class teacher. I want to be a preacher. Well, they don't just grow on trees. One does not simply step into these roles with the passage of time as if someone says, you know, I'm 50 years old now. I'm old enough to be an elder. No, it doesn't work that way. Getting older doesn't just by itself qualify a person to be an elder. One is deciding whether he will be able to fulfill these roles at least effectively when he's a teenager. You need to be thinking about this. If you're a teenager, is one the decisions I'm making right now, will they lead to me being an elder? Because I want to be an elder one day. Well, then, as a teenager, start making those decisions. Start making those decisions. I want to be a good father. And I'll start on the road to being a good father when I get married and my wife and I have our first child. No. Back here, long before you get married, you need to start making those decisions about what it takes to be a good father or a good husband, a good wife, a good mother. If one waits to decide whether he will be an elder by the time he is old enough to be an elder, he almost certainly will not be qualified to be an elder. Then children. One does not decide that he will make faithful Christians out of his children and save their souls when they are baptized. That decision is made when they're born or even before their births, really. So, applying this to parents. Parents need to project. They need to extrapolate their decisions regarding their children and ask themselves, what will these decisions mean for them 20 years or more into the future? And maybe, depending upon what they foresee, you might want to adjust those decisions with regard to their children. I'm checking my time here. Okay, I'm going to indulge myself with a story here. As an example, if I may be permitted to use this personal example. When our daughter was, I guess, 14 in the ninth grade, she went into her high school band. And there came a time when her high school band was going to take her down from Piscataway, New Jersey, down to Virginia Beach, Virginia. And I don't know if there was some concerts, some sort of band contest down there, what was going on, but it was a big, important trip. And as part of the trip, they were going to have some recreational time and so forth, and that recreational time was going to involve them into going, I think it was going to be Busch Gardens, and a big amusement park down there in Virginia. And that was going to be on Sunday when they were going to go to Busch Gardens. Well, I was thinking about that, you know, and I just could not, ultimately could not stand the thought that my daughter, when God's people were in church buildings everywhere worshiping the Lord as they should on the first day of the week, my daughter is just going to be riding roller coasters or something in some amusement park, whooping it up and having fun. And she was a Christian. And I thought, you know, I just cannot stand. I just do not want my daughter on the Lord's Day to be involved in that kind of activity when she should be in church. Cannot abide that. So I called up the band director and I said, listen, can we pick her up out of the group and take her with us, and then after church, return her? Well, he couldn't say no. We're her parents. He said, okay, no aunt, no uncle or anything, just the parents, you know, got to be the parents. Okay, so we decided, Leslie and I decided, along with Brigham, we're going to make a trip down to Virginia so that we can be there on hand to pick up our daughter, take her to church on Sunday morning. Actually, we stayed with some friends down there who used to be members here. We all went to worship as a family that Sunday morning. And, you know, my daughter, I'll have to tell you this, she didn't like it. I could tell she was upset at me. But I don't like my children being angry at me, but I felt that this was the right decision to make. This is what we did. And so we returned her afterwards, and she was upset that she had missed out on all that fun at Busch Gardens. Well, to move toward the end of the story, now she's married to one of the young men in whose home we stayed. And both she and her husband are faithful members of the church in Roanoke, Virginia. So I'd like to look at that as the end of the story. But see, with that, let's see, when she was 14, I guess that was that 21 years ago? Yeah, you think about it. See, a decision that was made back here had profound spiritual implications up here. So that's the point of the lesson. We need to think about the decisions that we make today. They may seem small and insignificant to us. We need to ask ourselves, let's project it out. 20 years, will this decision have an impact then? You know, it's as if people have destined themselves for the ends that they cannot see and they may not intend to reach by their decisions, which nevertheless lead them right to this point. Proverbs 14, verse 12, there's a way which seems right to a man, but the end thereof is the way of death. But there's good news behind this. There's good news. I know that this has been a kind of dark lesson, and I don't like dark lessons, but sometimes I feel the need to say these things. The good news is that early on, there's a window of opportunity when some bad decisions can be corrected. Might not be correctable later on. Well, at least not the repercussions necessarily. Life in God can be forgiving. They can allow for recovery, especially to young people. Young people, I was a young person one time, and I can tell you from personal experience, young people can do some really dumb things sometimes. But it seems like God understands that. And, you know, when their immaturity causes them to make mistakes, others, adults, seem to understand that. And we make allowances for that. And we help them, don't we? We help them. That's what I want to close out with, okay? Us adults, us parents, us older people. You know, while we're patient with young people, and we don't hold their past against. I would not want people to hold my past youthful mistakes against me. I hope they don't. But and generally, I don't think people do. I think people chalk up young people's mistakes to their youthful immaturity, and they're patient with them. But we adults, we parents especially, need to be willing to step in and give our young people guidance. I know they will resist it. That's the nature of young people. They can be stubborn. They don't think you want, they don't think you know what you're talking about. That's what they want to believe. They think that they're the smart ones. I realize this. But I have been told that even though young people don't sound look like they're listening, they are listening and they're picking up, and maybe one day they will apply what you've said. Let's step in with that guidance that they need. It may be that there is at least one person here today who wishes to render obedience to the gospel of Jesus Christ. The Bible has all kinds of great practical wisdom for us, but the wisest thing it has for us is to tell us that we have salvation available to us, that we have heaven awaiting us through Jesus Christ and His sacrifice on the cross, if we're wise enough to embrace the wisdom of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Come forward in faith and in repentance to confess your faith in Jesus Christ before us, and then be baptized, immersed in a body of water for the forgiveness of your sins. If you're not at the point where you're not sure about that, or you don't know if you do believe in Jesus Christ and you want some help, you want some Bible studies, we would be glad to help you with that also. If you have reached the decision of baptism and you have been baptized into Christ, but since then you've gotten on that slippery slope and you've slid back some, there are people here who are willing to help you and would like to see you come back. Won't you do that? Come forward, make confession of your sins before us, that God might forgive you of your sins, that your brethren might forgive you of your sins, that you might be put back on the right route to heaven again. Won't you come as together for your encouragement we now stand and sing.